Today's headline, Olympics and a shrewd Frenchman. Critics swear that the French successfully smeared lipstick on a pig for a big chunk of the 2024 Olympic Games. The French, though, are used to sloughing off jokes and insults. Someone said if they can't find an argument to join, they'll start one. Further, on slow days, restaurant wait persons resort to insulting each other. Even the French military is thrown under the bus. Another joke claims that when a hotel kitchen fire broke out, the French army surrendered. Seriously, though, research reveals that many fists both fiercely pounded and shook when French notables realized that the proposed Eiffel Tower was no joke. My initial intent was to focus on humor related to the Olympics, where TV people have done better jobs pronouncing French names than most Texas TV Goldie throats still stumbling on Uvalde. Here's a sheepish admission. Until the current Olympic coverage, I thought the Seine River winding through Paris to be pronounced Seine. Well, TV people, correctly I'm sure, are calling it Seine. We've seen Paris from all angles, wondering if they've used up all the fireworks, strobe lights, baubles, and beads. My lipstick on a pig reference applies largely to the Seine River and its role in the city's sewer system. Defenders claim they'd drink from the Seine, but critics won't stick their big toes in it. Truly, there's both humor and sadness in the TV coverage, much of which seems to be about the sizzle and not the steak. I'm reminded of the guy's first visit to a hockey game, where after several minutes of intense fighting, a game broke out. TV moguls are pulling out all the stops, frustrated that interest in the Olympics continues to wane. They're scrambling to enliven coverage, hoping to win back multi-millions of viewers who are no longer watching. While admitting that glitzy coverage has reached new heights in sight and sound, we lament the considerable evidence that it trivializes, and in some cases tramples on, traditional Christian values. Many Christians feel enough already. One wag, learning that breakdancing is now a recognized sport, said that when his granddaddy's hound dog squirmed like that, he gave him worm medicine. He further predicted that before long there may be additional, comparatively obscure sports, perhaps pickleball, as well as synchronized eye-rolling and underwater ice skating. Okay, enough rambling. Let's switch to Gustave Eiffel. His battle to make his tower a reality is so riveting that I printed 26 computer pages for later perusal. Don't go there unless you really want to know more about this tourist destination that attracts some 6 million visitors annually. My cursory observations shortchange you greatly, but here goes. In the 1880s, the French wanted a signature structure befitting the World Fair. Dozens of proposals were considered, but finally, Eiffel's project was chosen, despite vehement objections voiced by numerous financiers, artists, architects, and even other engineers. They claimed that his scheme was impractical at best and a cockamamie at worst. He proved them wrong, overseeing the construction of what was, for 40 years, the tallest freestanding guy wireless man-made structure in the world. At 1,083 feet, it was finally topped by New York City's Chrysler Building in 1939. When the tower opened, its elevators were not yet operative. Yet in the first 2 weeks, 30,000 visitors ascended the 710 stair steps to the top. The Eiffel Tower immediately wowed the world. The biggest initial winner was Eiffel himself, an opportunist as well as an engineer. His contract called for him to pocket 100% of all admission income for the first 20 years. No doubt he spent lots of time counting his money in his apartment at the tower's top, where he entertained such luminaries as Thomas Edison. Famous author Guy de Maupassant hated the tower. Yet he is said to have eaten lunch daily in its restaurant, complaining that it was the only place in Paris where the structure was not visible. Don Newberry, good day.